This evening, as has been announced, there will be, a little later, there will be an initiation ceremony. In other words, one devotee will accept a guru, the other will, who's already initiated, will be initiated into the Vaishnava Brahminical status. So accepting a guru was traditionally considered essential in Hindu tradition. It was that's based on Shastra, original scriptures, that if one does not have a guru, he cannot be considered a proper human being. In the West, also recently, it has become fashionable among a certain class of people to say that I have a guru or to have a guru. Ironically, in Hinduism, Buddhism, of course we don't claim to be Hindus or Buddhists, but to those who are followers of any true guru must represent the actual truth as distinguished from various religious schools which go by the names of Hinduism, Buddhism, this ism and that ism. But anyway, in culturally at least, we can say there's Hinduism and Buddhism, and in both traditions, to have a guru is essential. And ironically, the strain of Buddhism that has become, popular in the West, or the strain of Buddhism that is most imitated in the West, those who take a guru, it's that kind of Buddhism, just like Zen Buddhism, which is imitated in the West, in which traditionally monks would have to undergo stringent training under a guru, whereas in the modern so-called Buddhism in the West, you have a guru and that's it, more or less. Doesn't mean you really have to follow anything. Guru and disciple. This disciple word is intimately linked with the word discipline. Similarly, the Sanskrit term shishya, this is translated as disciple, that is intimately linked with the word shasan, which means control or discipline. So the disciple submits himself to be controlled, to be disciplined by the guru. Now there is a common misconception that spiritual life means that you become free and you don't really need to follow anything, but you just feel spiritual. Feeling spiritual, without defining the word very clearly, because who wants to be so technical? You just feel spiritual, and that is spiritual. However, without clearly understanding what it means to be spiritual, there's no question of being spiritual. It's one's imagination of being spiritual is just another phase of material life. So, to come to the spiritual platform requires discipline. Why is that? Because we are in this material condition due to being controlled by our senses. That means our whole endeavor in life in this world is to, for people on the gross platform, is to gratify our senses. That means we like to taste nice foods, we like to enjoy sexual activity, we like to see things which we consider appealing. And even for people who imagine themselves to be spiritual, a lot of the time it's simply a mental gratification. There's no actual endeavor to become free from the pushings of the senses, which is the action of maya or illusion. So Krishna consciousness means to be fully situated in love of Krishna, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Truth, beyond mundane sensuosity. That platform of Krishna consciousness, of true spiritual immersion in serving Krishna in the spiritual state, can only be attained by persons who are free from desires for material enjoyment. As long as one's thinking, let me enjoy this world in any way, either grossly or subtly, then that person is in bondage. So this idea that we'll simply be free and do as we like and wander on the roller coaster of our minds, this kind of thinking, that is exactly the kind of thinking which is to be conquered, which is possible by accepting spiritual discipline. Now, this idea, this very word discipline, is quite unpopular in the modern world. The founding fathers of America enshrined the principle of freedom. But freedom doesn't mean the freedom to do just exactly whatever you like, however you like, in whatever way you like. It's understood that freedom means the freedom to act. Certain freedom is allowed, but with some responsibility. Absolute freedom, that you have the, if you think, well, I'd be free to do exactly whatever I like, then there'd be no laws whatsoever, and there'd be no human society. And even the animals observe certain social norms among themselves. So, the proper use of freedom, which freedom means the choice to act in this way or that way, freedom of choices. So the proper use of that freedom is to act in such a way that ourselves are best benefited and others are also best benefited. That is the proper use of freedom. Freedom to simply indulge in doing what we like without consideration of the consequences, that is on the animal platform, because the animals, they don't think that, is there any higher purpose to life? Animal means they simply see where is the opportunity for enjoying ourselves, or what we will do for our own benefit, or for their children's benefit, or for the pack of wolves, for the group benefit. But they have no higher thinking that beyond this material existence, which is characterized by suffering of repeated birth and death, what is the actual situation beyond birth and death, beyond the suffering of this world? People who do not think of that, which means most people in the modern age, even those who call themselves spiritual, or even those who give lip service to so-called Hinduism or Buddhism, people who don't consider that this life is full of suffering, janma mrityu jara vyadhi, birth, death, old age and disease, people who do not think like that, who do not consider how to get free from the repeated cycle of birth and death, such persons are no better than animals, because animals don't think of these things. And if humans don't think of these things, then they're also not really humans, although they may be more intelligent in some ways, just like building big buildings and big freeways and all this, but if the ultimate goal is simply how to live a so-called happy life in this world, then the level of consciousness, although the level of intelligence may be superficially higher, the level of consciousness is not higher than that of the animals. So, real human life begins when one considers atato brahma jignasa. Now we should inquire into the actual nature of reality, the spiritual nature that is beyond that which we presently see, touch, feel, smell, hear, taste and think about, that which is beyond our present level of sensual perception. That is, to give you the answer, Krishna. in the spiritual world. Krishna is eternally existing beyond the platform of material sense perception and beyond the platform of material sense enjoyment. But to reach that platform, one has to become fully purified. Indulgence in sensual activities for personal pleasure, which is the be-all and end-all of modern life. Therefore we say this modern civilization is not civilization at all. It's simply animalistic. Highly developed animalism. Because it's simply based on how we can enjoy. The ultimate goal is simply how to enjoy our senses, even up to old age, the last moment of life. But the actual purpose of life is to turn off our cell phones. Well, that's not the purpose of life, but it does help. So, everyone please turn off your cell phone or put it on silent mode. Thank you very much. So the ultimate purpose of life is to become purified. This indulgence in sensual enjoyment, that is impure. Why is that impure? Because that is called karma or material desire, which entangles us in this material world. As long as we have material desires, then we have to get born and again to fulfill those material desires. And intricately mixed with material desire comes anger, greed, kaam, krodh, lobh, moha, illusion, mada, arrogance or conceit, and matsarya, envy of others. So these are all impurities. One has to accept discipline to arise above these impurities. Why is discipline required? Because from time immemorial, our proclivity has been to simply, whatever we see, we want to acquire it, we want to enjoy it. That's how the whole advertising industry works. They simply show some billboard, okay, buy this, spend your money on this. And people do so unthinkingly. If people actually thought, then no one would ever purchase Pepsi Cola or Coca Cola. Because it's of no benefit to anyone whatsoever. But it's multi-billion-dollar business. It's based on the understanding that people, if they're simply offered something which promises to fulfill some petty desire, some interaction of the taste buds with some not very good tasting liquid, that will give you pleasure. That is something that you should do. That is something desirable for yourself. So the whole advertising industry is based on this principle that people unthinkingly will indulge in spending their money on things that they don't actually need. If you actually needed it, you wouldn't need an advertisement either, would you? So it's based on the principle that people are like dogs with their tongues out, slavering. That we want, I want this, I want this, I want this. But of no actual benefit to them whatsoever. So because we have this foolish, doggish propensity to jump after that without thinking, to jump onto objects, to pursue various objects which are not actually helping us, which are not for our benefit. Therefore, we require discipline to control the mind and the senses. The mind and the senses, if they are allowed to act unrestrictedly, they will simply drag us to hell. Because by attempting to fulfill various desires, then kaam, krodh, lobh, moha, mada, matsarya, then we become greedy, lusty, envious, arrogant, illusioned, and in this way we perform various sinful activities. Sinful activities means those which cause harm to ourselves and others and which produce reactions for which we have to suffer. For instance, if someone likes to eat meat, which is a sinful activity, then they have to take the form of an animal that is going to get eaten in the next life. They take that form. Or if one likes to go around naked or semi-naked, which is quite popular here in Southern California, not so much this year, but still people are going around in shorts, hoping against hope. But then you're likely to become a tree, because a tree stands naked for many years. You like to be naked? Okay, here you go. Here's a good chance. So this is how the law of karma works. It's not a good proposition that we shall take various forms to suffer in this material world. But because our senses, we are as if impelled by our senses to do so, therefore discipline is required to help us control the senses. The center of the senses is the mind. The enjoyment of the senses, what is that enjoyment? That enjoyment of drinking Pepsi Cola, so-called enjoyment. Just using this as an example, I have nothing particularly against Pepsi Cola any more than anything else in this miserable material world. But the enjoyment of, the so-called enjoyment of drinking Pepsi Cola, it's not experienced on the tongue. It's experienced in the mind. It's the uncontrolled mind that thinks, let me get this, let me get that, let me get that, let me enjoy this, let me enjoy that. Never mind if others have to suffer, but let me enjoy. It's the uncontrolled mind which it perceives as pleasure that which is actually very tucha, the word is there, very minute. There is some experience of pleasure, but it's not actual happiness. It doesn't satisfy the soul. It just gives some very slight sensation of happiness, which is far away from the soul's, namely the spiritual entity's, real desire for unlimited bliss. So this desire is impurity. This desire for material enjoyment, it is impure, and it causes us to suffer repeated birth and death. Therefore, the mind which is chasing after material enjoyment requires to be disciplined. Now, there are two basic kinds of discipline. One is externally imposed and the other is self-imposed, self-discipline. But so both are required. If one is to be a disciple, one has to take the vow to follow certain rules and regulations which help in controlling the mind and senses. And the guru will discipline the student, and the student will accept that discipline because he knows it's for his highest benefit. So there are certain rules. Discipline means there are certain do's and do nots, which are, again, these are very unpopular in the modern pop culture, so-called spirituality of just feeling good. There are certain rules to be followed. Those who take initiation, they vow no meat eating, no illicit sex, no gambling, no intoxication. There are many do nots. These are disciplines. Because if we indulge in grossly sensual activities, that will harm others and drag our consciousness down. Our consciousness, which is addicted to enjoying the sense objects, it's like an addiction. It's just like an addict. If you try to remove, a tobacco addict, and you try to stop them, and for some time they refrain from smoking. But if they once again smoke, then again the strong desires come back. So the discipline is there. We agree. No meat eating, no gambling, no illicit sex, no intoxication. This is these are controlling the indulgence in grossly sensual activities. But ultimately the disciple has to come to the level of no material attraction on any level, material, spiritual, material gross level, material subtle level, so that he may develop his pure spiritual desires to serve Krishna. We cannot properly serve Krishna if we are desiring to do anything else. Love for Krishna, which is the goal of bhakti, Krishna consciousness, means that, as Krishna repeatedly states in Bhagavad Gita, it is without any other diversion. Pure love means without any other desire, without any diversion. Ananyas chintayantamam, ananya chetasatantam. Again and again in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna speaks that actual love, actual bhakti, actual devotion is one-pointed only. So to come to that level, we have to become free from material desires. And it's not such an easy thing. Just like I had mentioned the Buddhist sects, which traditionally the monks in those sects, they would have to sit for meditation for hours, and if one of them slightly went out from the vertical, in other words, if they just leaned forward a little bit, whack, they'd get hit by a stick. So we don't have that kind of discipline here. It's probably illegal also. That kind of discipline is there in those systems because they don't have Krishna. The discipline in Krishna consciousness is not just negative, control the senses, control the mind, but the positive, that is actually the main discipline. Come before Krishna, decorate Krishna, see how beautiful is Krishna. So it's a process. Krishna consciousness means to revive our natural attraction for Krishna, but to do that fully and properly, it also means that the unnatural attraction towards everything which diverts us from Krishna, namely material sense enjoyment, that has to be subdued and eventually stopped, because it is that bad habit of wanting to enjoy separately from Krishna that stops our natural flow of love for toward Krishna. So this attraction toward the sense objects, it seems natural to us, but we should understand that it is unnatural, because the result of indulging in sense enjoyment is that we suffer. We suffer repeated birth, death, old age and disease. Even in this life we see that people who try to indulge more and more in sense indulgence, they actually become more and more miserable. And the proof of that is the modern materialistic civilization, epitomized all over the world by the United States of America, in which the goal of life has been popularly said as acquiring as much as one can to enjoy the senses. And people in this country at the present time have more opportunity for sensual enjoyment than in any civilization known in history, at least known in history in the Western world. Of course, it's a very limited history. History goes back a lot further, but what they call history, and say in the last few thousand years, modern America is the most advanced country, because it has developed facilities for and a whole culture whereby people can indulge in sensual enjoyment to the greatest extent. And the result? No one is happy. Those who indulge more in sensual enjoyment, they are the most unhappy. You have a whole nation of frustrated, stressed out people, and the shallowness of it all it's epitomized by the redefinition of the word friend by Facebook. How shallow it's all become, or superficial. No one is happy. No one can trust anyone else. no one actually loves anyone else, the more we become materialistic, means self-centered. Let me enjoy my senses. The more frustrated we become, the more full of anxiety we become, the more our desires go on increasing and increasing and increasing, and the more frustrated we become, and therefore we have in this country so many psychiatric cases, record, and the world record is being broken daily as the number increases more and more and more. So this is evidence. Actually, this is evidence. If we want evidence that material life is simply suffering, just look all around you, or look inside you. Therefore, discipline is required, that we can rise above this attraction for material sense enjoyment, which seems to be very strong, and it seems to be almost impossible to overcome. Just like people, it's a fashion to meditate. I say it's a fashion, because actual meditation in traditional cultures is more like that kind of meditation which I just mentioned in the Zen Buddhist tradition, where you just sit, and you sit, and you're supposed to, I don't know what you're supposed to do in Zen Buddhism, I don't think they know either, but I mean, if you have things like meditating on the sound of one hand clapping, I mean, what does that mean? But actual meditation means to fix the mind on one point. And that one point is described in the Vedic literature. Dhyana vasita tadgatena manasa pashanti yam yoginaha. Yogis, traditionally they meditate on Lord Vishnu, which means Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that meditation, that can, to actually enter, to come to the stage of being able to meditate, one has to undergo much prior training. It's not that you can just sit down, okay folks, let's meditate for 15 minutes before we rush off to work. Or you have a meditation session punctuated by a coffee break. This is not meditation. The actual tradition means one has to undergo much discipline and training before one can even begin to meditate. What is it? Yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, pratyahara, dhyana. After several stages of yogic teaching, one can actually start to meditate. And nowadays, what is called meditation, it's simply a farce for cheating people. So meditation you're supposed to make your, it's actually, you could say it's helpful, the modern meditation process in the West, in as much as it relax, it's a relaxation process. If it was called a relaxation process, that would be more accurate. To call it meditation is bogus. So in meditation, the mind is supposed to be calm and free from material thoughts, material desires and thoughts. But who can do that? Can anyone sit even for 5 seconds without any thoughts entering their mind? They talk about emptying the mind, which is impossible, because the mind is by nature full. Actual meditation means to fix the mind on one point, and that one point is Krishna. So, but this imitation of meditation that is common in the West, they say to empty the mind, but that is not possible, because the mind is full of so many thoughts, and the mind will run. What am I going to do after this meditation session? What did I do before? What did my girlfriend say last night? What will I say to her in reply? And so many thoughts that go on and on in our mind. So, the mind is running on, running on, running on like a horse out of control. So, discipline is required to bridle the mind. A horse out of control, if we're sitting on a horse out of control, it's a very dangerous situation. If we're on a controlled horse, then that's very helpful. The horse can take us to where we want to go or need to go. But if we're on an uncontrolled horse, running, galloping out of control, it's a very dangerous situation. we just have to go where the horse takes us, and there's every danger of falling off and breaking every bone in our body. So the mind is like that. It's like a horse that is unbridled, uncontrolled, and just like a horse has to be trained and disciplined and brought under control. So the uncontrolled mind requires to be controlled. That is how to do that. There's a process for doing so. That process, that is called yoga. Yoga is not, as is commonly construed in the modern age, simply a system of exercise for improving one's health. But yoga means the process of linking one's consciousness with the Supreme Consciousness. And the highest stage of yoga is bhakti yoga, which means to link one's consciousness with the Supreme Consciousness, who is Krishna, by the natural method of loving service to Krishna. But in all yoga systems, discipline is required. In all human life, actually, discipline is required. So this discipline, this is meant to control the mind and senses. It is absolutely required if one is to prosper, even materially for that matter. In education, if there's no discipline, then the students cannot learn properly. And again, the modern educational system in America gives credence to that statement. In as much as the modern idea is, well, you don't force the children, you don't discipline them, you just try to make everything nice for them. It doesn't work. They don't learn properly. So discipline is required. Discipline doesn't mean that you hate others. Or maybe the idea of discipline conjures up some idea of some nasty schools with nasty teachers who are nasty and mean to you. But actual discipline, which is not imposed on others, but given to others for the sake of their benefit, that is a sign of actual love. To let children do whatever they like, or to let the citizens who are unguided do whatever they like, leaves them open to exploitation, just like the example of Pepsi Cola and a million trillion other products. Unless people are trained to control their mind and given the knowledge of what is actually beneficial for them, then they're open to exploitation. Buy this. See this pornography. And people look. And what is what happens? Then their mind becomes polluted. And then there are so many horrible crimes committed. So not to train children, not to train the citizens, not to discipline them. We may think that is giving freedom, but that is actually the worst violence. Because those who are in knowledge, those who are in a position to benefit others, they have a responsibility to train others, to train their wards, so that their dependents, their wards, may develop and fulfill the actual goal of life. There is a story in this regard of a boy who was raised by his aunt, his parents having died or whatever. So the aunt indulged him, and she thought that to love him means let him do whatever he likes. Why should I discipline him? Just let him do whatever he likes. So the boy did whatever he liked. And as he grew up, he fell into bad company, a gang of rogues. And he was, along with them, he was stealing and cheating. And eventually he was caught and tried for murder. He had committed some murders. And he was sentenced to be hanged to death publicly. This is maybe another country in another era. So he's hanged to death publicly. So as he was brought up to the gallows, he was asked if he had a last request. So this young man saw in the crowd his aunt sobbing. He asked, "Let my aunt come up." So his aunt came out to him and he said, he was tied up. So he said, put your ear against, just next to my mouth. So she thought he had something to whisper in her ear. He bit off her ear. And in her other ear, he said, I am here today because of your fault, because you did not discipline me or tell me what is right and what is wrong. So parents, political leaders, teachers, or anyone in a position of which is supposed to be authoritative over others, or in a position which they're supposed to guide others, it is their duty to discipline and train others so that they may know what is right and what is wrong, so that they may act in a manner that is beneficial for themselves and beneficial for others. This propaganda that, well, just do whatever you like, be free, no discipline, just feel good, feel spiritual, this is all simply cheating. And those who propagate this, although you may think that they're very spiritual people, they're not at all spiritual. They're simply opening or showing the path by which we are sure to be degraded, because simply by imagining ourselves to be spiritual without understanding what it actually means to be spiritual, which means to purify the senses so that we're not attracted to useless things which are of no benefit to us, so that we're attracted only to Krishna. Unless we come to that stage by discipline and training, then we've wasted our human life, which is attained only after many, many births. So human life is meant for this training. It's meant for this discipline. And therefore, in the scriptures it's said that one who does not accept a guru, one who does not accept this discipline, they're simply animals. They're not even human beings at all. They're not fulfilling the proper purpose of human life. So we see in this Krishna conscious movement, everything is very joyful. It's not, you might think by now that it's like a prison, you better escape as fast as you can. But actually the prison is outside. The prison, we don't see it. We don't see how we are controlled by our senses. We are slaves to our senses. This is the place where you can come to be free by accepting the rules and regulations which train us to channel the desires of the senses towards serving Krishna. Serving Krishna is naturally blissful. Seeing, instead of seeing some pornography or some sports game, see Krishna. Instead of eating even vegetarian food, if we eat only that which is offered to Krishna, that purifies our sense of taste. So in this way, all the senses are to be engaged in the service of the master of the senses, Krishna, to become free from those lowly desires which tempt us away from the service of Krishna. In the initial stage, it is required that we accept spiritual discipline. Do this, don't do that. There are so many do's and do nots, which one who is serious about spiritual life has to accept. So those who accept initiation, they become a disciple, they accept the discipline, they make the vow that we shall follow this, so that we can attain the actual goal of life, which is to become free from these petty desires that bind us in this material world, and so that our real self, which is beyond desires for anything mundane, everything mundane means petty, so we can become free from these lowly desires and discover our actual self, our pure desires for serving Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who eternally exists in the transcendental land of Vrindavan, engaged in beautiful spiritual activities which are fully satisfying to the purified senses of all who engage there with him. Those who accept initiation into this world, the world beyond birth and death, the world beyond pettiness. But in the initial stages, discipline is required so that we don't get deviated by the recurring illusion of thinking that I can enjoy this material world. We have to hear regularly of the nature of the spiritual world and of the degrading nature of this material world, and take the vow to act in such a way that our pure spiritual consciousness, beyond the pushings of the senses, can be revived. And we take the vow not to engage in activities that will again drag our consciousness down to the petty platform of thinking, let me enjoy, instead of the petty platform of thinking, let me, minuscule me enjoy, let me serve Krishna, who is the actual enjoyer of everything. So discipline is required to revive that pure spiritual consciousness. This goes against the popular way of thinking of being spiritual, but actually what it means to be spiritual should be defined. There's this misunderstanding that spiritual is something undefinable. That's another nonsense idea. That in this way everyone is just given a free rein. There again, you see that example of the horse. Free rein to imagine that you're spiritual without any actual freedom from material desire. If there's not freedom from material desire, then where is the question of spiritual advancement? So this is required. Disciple means discipline. Without becoming a disciple, without accepting spiritual discipline, one cannot advance beyond the platform of being a slave of the senses. One cannot advance to the actual platform of pure consciousness, spiritual consciousness, Krishna consciousness. Hare Krishna. Is there any question about this, please? Yeah, please.
Well, just a comment I have on a question also. It was very nice talk and very...
Yeah, it's meant to be more than nice.
Educational. Sometimes, I hear...
A lot of America bashing by a lot of preachers here. Well, it requires a lot of bashing, actually. It requires a lot of bashing for the reason that I stated, that this modern society is based on cheating people of the actual purpose of life. We don't hate America or Americans. But it is our duty to point out that people in this country and in countries all over the world who are very much influenced by this American way of life are being misled and being cheated of the actual goal of life. That is required to be stated.
That is very correct. But the thing is, America is not the only country. It's
that I also stated, if you'd listen carefully. Please listen carefully. Now I'm bashing you. You also require bashing. Yes. Hare Krishna. Can a person who's actively seeking God also face depression? Yes, but that will not remove your depression. This jingly, what's it called? Tone? Ringtone. Yeah. Ding, 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 ding. Yeah. Doesn't remove depression. But those who have found God, for them there's no question of depression. Actually, depression, anxiety, frustration, these should all serve as platforms for us to actively seek God. The cause, the root cause of all of this is our ayoga, not being in yoga, not being linked with Krishna.